I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Vance Morris. He's founder of Deliver Service Now. Vance helps business owners get, serve, and keep clients for life through creating experiences and response-required marketing. I think this is going to be really, really important. I think it's going to just be an amazing episode because he's about creating delight in your entire customer's experience. And guess what? Delight's profitable. Vance is a former birth control factory security guard turned Disney leader turned bankrupt out-of-work executive turned carpet cleaner turned successful entrepreneur. So, Vance, welcome.
And the crowd goes wild.
That's quite the list of things.
Yeah. It stands out. And, you know, I think for all of us that are marketers or, you know, business owners, you got, not that you need a shtick, but you do need something that helps you stand out from the masses. And I only started using the birth control factory thing, you know, about a year and a half ago, because I sounded like all the other coaches and consultants out there when I was introducing myself. I said, I got to come up with something. And it's true, though. I did. It was like summers during college. I was third shift. I was a ortho plant in New Jersey. It's where they made Ortho Novum 777, and they made diaphragms.
Wow.
And so that was my summer job for a couple of years.
And midnight theft of the birth control factory was an issue?
They did a lot of animal testing, and it wasn't so much keeping what we had in, it was keeping all the protesters out.
Yeah. When I was in college, I was building amplifiers for cardiac research over at UNC Hospital. And when we did experiments over there, they had to kind of block off the windows to the labs for the same reasons. Yeah.
But so it set me up for a great, great career.
Yeah. So we're going to get to the Disney part because that's where the magic comes in. But bankrupt, out of work executive turned carpet cleaner turned successful entrepreneur. What happened?
Sure. Well, I'll touch on the Disney thing just a little bit to set the stage because that was my real first job and it really set what I was going to be about for the rest of my career. And I spent a little over a decade there in the resort division. Luckily, I grew at the resorts and was able to be on the development team of some of their restaurants and attractions. And then I was on the operations teams for some of them. And the big lesson I learned there was that Disney runs on processes and systems. I mean, they got a system for everything. I mean, you want to change a bus tire, they got a system for it. You want to carry a tray in a restaurant, they got a system for it. And I carried that everywhere I went. And so after I left Disney, people do leave. I'm a living proof of that. I mean, I didn't shrivel up and die. I had a couple of contracts with some other restaurant companies. And then I had a couple of corporate food service jobs. And along the way, I realized I make a lousy employee. I just don't like to be told what to do. So, you know, I think a lot of us go into business because, well, that's the reason. So when I was, I had looked at starting a restaurant concept. I was looking more for a franchise or a known concept. Wasn't really ready to just start something from the ground up. I was looking for a proof of concept. But Everybody wanted, $1 or $2 million liquid cash, and well, I just didn't have that laying around. So I did what every small boy dreams of doing, and I started a carpet cleaning business. Yeah, it's of course that's what we all do. And the week that I was supposed to start training for this franchise, my wife had a cerebral aneurysm and ended up in the neuro ICU in Washington, D.C. for 11 days. So we went from two very nice six-figure salaries down to zero overnight, hence the out-of-work bankrupt portion of everything. She was out of work, disabled for a good 18, 19 months, and I had no income, so I had this carpet cleaning business. Of course, this is 2007, which is a great year to start a business. Actually, it was a great year. See, I had nowhere to go but up. Because I was already at zero. I couldn't get any worse. Everybody else was complaining that their sales were down. And I'm like, ah, this is great. I'm going up. And what I did was I took all my Disney knowledge, all the systems and processes, and I packed it into this carpet cleaning business. And I intentionally positioned it as a premium service for affluent clients. I didn't want to be one of those telephone pole, you drive down the street and you see the telephone pole guy staples it up there, nine rooms for $37 or something silly like that. And I was like, I'm not going to be that guy. And after a few years, people started saying, how do you do that? And so I started doing a little coaching on the side and decided, well, I don't want to do that for free. So I started charging for the coaching and just kind of progressed from there. Fast forward to today, I've got three home service businesses that I still own. I've got a general manager who runs them. I spend about 90 minutes a week on those businesses, essentially cashing checks, kissing babies, that kind of thing. And actually, most of that time is spent to a weekly meeting with the GM. And the rest of my time is spent coaching and consulting with small businesses who are looking really to separate themselves from being viewed as a commodity, give them price elasticity. So, being able to command a price that is outside the norm of their industry. And most importantly, keep the clients that they have worked so hard to get. Because I don't know about you, but getting a new client is ridiculously expensive. And getting a client is relatively inexpensive. So, why not focus there?
Well, and one of the things that you brought up that I like, certainly passionate to me, I don't want to work with anybody who's trying to compete on price.
Oh, exactly.
And one of my mentors just put it very simply. He's like, you can't provide customer service. You can't provide, if you're competing on price, the one thing that will suffer is your customer service. And for him, he just wants to work with companies that have excellent customer service because they also tend to be very profitable.
Yeah, I had an oil change. I'll give you a quick story. A string of oil change stations. Kind of like a Jiffy Lube, Quick Lube, but he was private. And he was getting coupon clipped to death by the national chains. And every time they came out with a new price, he had to drop his price. And it was just, and there's no sec, there's no competitive advantage to being second cheapest. So he was like, well, I have to drop my price. I said, all right. I don't even know how we got introduced, but I said, look, you need to go the other direction. You need to go up. And you need to provide the value that goes along with premium pricing. So we did some brainstorming and I'll give you the highlights. So we designed it as a 1950 style service station. You remember when the four guys would run out of the service station, all got white shirts and bow ties on, they got little white gloves, and one guy squeegees your windshield, the other one's checking the air pressure in your tire, and one guy will escort you into the waiting room where there's actually today's newspaper, and there's a barista in there making your favorite coffee drink for you. And the barista is actually one of the oil change technicians who just happened to rotate in that day from the oil changing. Every one of his 11 employees knows how to make coffee drinks. He's charging about 60% more than the Jiffy Lube, literally two storefronts down from him. Now, he's done a bunch of things here. One, he's attracting a completely different clientele, one that wants the service, wants that level of experience. And he's kicked away a lot of the coupon clippers. He's got less wear and tear on his building, less wear and tear on his employees. His customer retention is through the roof. His least tenured person is like 16 months. And in that industry is just unheard of. And his profitability is through the roof. I think we pretty close to 3x'd his profitability in under 6 months just by switching from being a price competitor to going to premium pricing.
And it makes a difference. That as you were telling that story, what came to mind for me is there's I'm sure you've heard of Buc-ee's.
Oh, yeah.
A couple of months ago, my wife and I were driving. We were driving back from Tennessee, and when we went through Temple, Texas, we gassed up there. And I'm sitting at the gas pump, and they have some deal where they say, "Hey, if you get a car wash, we'll give you $1 off per gallon." And I went back. In hindsight, I'm like, that was so stupid to even give it 2 brain cells. The answer should have been yes. But I'm sitting there going back and forth, and I'm like, well, basically, it's a free car wash. And so I go ahead and sign up for it. My wife gets back from the restroom, which of course is immaculate. Their bathrooms are
Yep.
immaculate. And I say, hey, I bought a car wash. She's like, okay. We start going through the car wash, and instantly we regret not having our grandkids in the back of the car. This, I can't do it service to describe how different this car wash was. We had a beaver coming across the projection of a beaver coming across the windshield. We had rainbow colored soap. I mean, it was beyond anything. And so since then, we keep telling people, you need to find a reason to get your car washed at Buc-ee's. And I'm now saying it here on the podcast, but what it does, they created a premium experience. I'm sure this little dollar off is just that's just the crack dealer on the corner trying to get you hooked.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And they'll eventually be charging for that car wash. But Buc-ee's are massive. They have more gas pumps than any car station gas station I've ever seen, and they're always full.
Yeah, they're brilliant, brilliant marketers. And the fact that they have clean restrooms is probably one of the biggest magnets they have. I mean, sadly, McDonald's used to use bathroom cleaning was a marketing expense. Sadly, that's been gone for decades, but that originated, clean bathrooms was a thing that McDonald's was known for. Unfortunately, that's no longer true, but
That is sad. I didn't know that.
yeah.
I didn't know that. But kind of coming back to your central point, instead of going down market, go up market, create an exceptional experience, and the money follows.
It certainly does, because there's always people out there that are looking for that experience. And there are people that will drive or travel greater distances for the experience. They become brand loyal, which means they have an emotional attachment to you versus being having a customer loyalty, which means that it's transactional based. So if you are customer loyal, that means they're only coming to you based on price or convenience or something like that. When they're brand loyal, they're coming because of you, because of how you make them feel. And that is a much stronger bond. You can raise prices and dollars to donuts, you probably won't lose people. You might be a little further away or not convenient, and people will still travel to you because of how you make them feel. That's one of the main principles from Disney is how they make people feel. And they know what product they're selling. They're selling two things: happiness and memories. It's the only two things Disney sells. They don't sell anything else. And they understand that. And once us as business owners understand what we are truly selling, that's when that price elasticity comes in there, and the true customer retention, where we're literally putting a fence around our customers, keeping them in and our competitors out, really comes into play.
Well, and I want us to back up and kind of drive over that land again because As a marketer, people come to me and they're like, Craig, we want you to run ads that get us as many leads as possible. And we're going to monitor the some, fortunately, not many of our clients. Usually we weed these folks out, but some of them will say, well, we want to see which campaigns are making money and which campaigns are not. And that's fundamentally a transactional mindset. I'm like, guys, we have to run these branding campaigns in parallel because of the way it makes them feel. We're using those to build emotional bonds. And it's for the reason that you said, do you want transactional customers or do you want relational?
Yep.
And I think a lot of people feel like, oh, I want transactional. Their first pass is, I want transactional. I want to run an ad and I want to get the money from them. I want to bring a customer in the door and I want to collect their money. Why is that bad?
Is that rhetorical, or are you asking?
No, I'm asking because there's some people that aren't tracking with us yet.
Okay. Well, one, you've got no real shot of having them come back. One, I mean, we said earlier, attracting a new customer is expensive. New customer is not cheap to get. And a lot of times on that first sale, you're going to break even or you're going to go negative on the profitability. And unless you have a robust customer retention system or a robust experience that goes along with it, you're not going to see them again because it was just all right, well, great. Thanks for the, I mean, it's like going to McDonald's. Okay, great. Thanks for the burger. Maybe I'll see you again. Maybe I won't. Just maybe when I'm driving by. But when you have that emotional connection, we've got a burger joint, if we're talking burgers, that's, we've got probably three McDonald's between my house and this burger joint. And I drive past all of them to go to the burger joint because of not only the food quality, but how they make me feel. I mean, we got axe throwing in there. The servers are actually nice. The service is impeccable, et cetera, et cetera. And they do things to make us feel like we're actually wanted there, not like we are an imposition on them. So I don't know if that's the answer you were looking for, but
No, that's exactly it. I think it's a trap that people fall in. I think a lot of people that are listening, it's not that they intend bad. It's they, I call it the spreadsheet mentality. You know, my wife used to work for a company. I'm not going to say their name here because they were absolutely wonderful to her when I was in the hospital. But she said there's a rumor going around that they're going to get bought by private equity. And I told her, I said, if that's true, if private equity cuts buys them, the first thing that's getting cut is customer service.
100%. 100%. We stayed at a resort. I had my mastermind meeting at one of those, a brand resort, and but it was owned by private equity. And it was just, I mean, you would have thought that somebody was literally out there counting the lemon slices and the number of lemon slices we were allowed to have with our iced tea. I mean, it was pathetic. It was just really bad. So yeah, once PE gets a hold of it, it's downhill.
Right. And unfortunately, there's a lot of business owners that are sitting there. They maybe there's a part of PE that they admire. They see these people with MBAs and they're like, hey, these are people that manage expenses. For me to be successful, I need to manage expenses, which in part is true. But if you end up hurting the customer experience, it's going to cost you more in the end.
Well, and there's a difference. We talked a little bit about numbers and marketing, and I get it. I mean, I am all about, seeing an ROI on my marketing campaign. I get it because I want to make sure that the thing's successful. I don't want to be sending out $4,000 worth of postcards and wondering, well, did that work? But at the same time, you also have what's called ROX, what's return on experience. And it's a little more nebulous, a little bit more difficult to measure, though I would argue you can measure it, and which is in your NPS scores, which is in your customer retention, and in your overall client lifetime. Is that extended, or is your lifetime value higher than the industry average? So looking at return on experience is all of the things that you invest in to make sure that they have a great experience. For example, Disney paints a lot of things in the Magic Kingdom or in a lot of other places every single night of the week. There's a horse post in the Magic Kingdom on Main Street, gets painted every single night. There's little white rope chains that go around the American flag right there on Main Street. They get painted every single night of the week. And they know at exactly what time to paint them based on temperature and humidity and rain and whatever, so that the paint is dry and perfect for the first guest when they come in. Now, that's a fanatical attention to detail. And a bean counter could easily come in and say, paint it every other night. And then it's going to slip. And then it's going to be, paint it every 3 nights. Paint it once a month. And so the operator, the owner, whoever's running it, is you've got to have what is your standard and what are you going to be about and what is, the detail you're going to invest in that is not going to be a detriment to the overall experience. Because once you start overlooking those little details, that's when you don't have the experience and you just become a widget and you're transactional.
One thing I wanted to touch on, you were talking about, loss leaders and what have you. If I heard you correctly, you're not against them. They just have to be used strategically. And like Bucky's Car Wash, they lost money on washing my car that day. But because they have a formula, they knew that once they could get me in that car wash, I'd be coming back. And if I had kids in the back seat of the car, every time we drive by Bucky's, the kids would badger me until they say, "We want to get the car washed."
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can tell you, I mean, I got my pay-per-click numbers for May for my carpet cleaning business, and I think it was right around $140 to get a new customer in the front door. My minimum charge is $199. So that leaves me what, $55 to pay my tech, insurance, van, gas in the van. It doesn't leave much. It certainly doesn't leave anything for me. So if I never clean for them again, I've lost money. Certainly haven't broken even. But I know that 71% of all of my customers clean every year with me. So I know on the second cleaning, I don't have to pay that $140 customer acquisition fee again because I already got them. And it only costs me $22 a year to market to my existing customers. So I'm now already $120 more profitable the second time I clean. I make it all up on the second cleaning. And that's why customer retention. Not only is it the right thing to do, but that's why it's so vital, because that's where all the money is. All the profit is in your repeat business. They've already bought from you, so they already have the whole know, like, and trust. They're more susceptible to upsells, cross sells, new services, new products, because if they're happy with you, and I mean, when's the best time for the men's store to sell you a tie? When you're standing there with your new suit. Right. I mean, the guy who I buy my suits from, I mean, he always sells me two ties. I don't even need a tie. I don't wear ties. And the guy's like, this tie is going to look good with it. I'm just throw it in the bag. I don't even argue with him anymore. Just throw it in the bag.
I used to buy my suits at the men's warehouse years ago, and I always got a big kick out of it. It was very clear what they were doing. They'd have, usually it was a guy. Sometimes they had, women working with you, but right when they had your suit, when you're trying your suit on it the first time, all of a sudden there was always a woman that worked in the store, and she barely fit in the dress she was wearing. And she'd come walking by, and they'd say, "Hey, what do you think about this?" I mean, she would walk by right at the right moment, and she's like, "Oh, that looks really good." And but it was this feeling, you have this beautiful woman telling you, "You look good." And I was able to figure out, and I was like, I still wasn't offended by it. I think it's funny. I wasn't offended that that was part of their sales process.
Brilliant. It's brilliant,
Well, and if you think about George Zimmerman's Zimmerman, his promise,
Zimmerman.
you're going to love the way you look. So he put somebody in the store that he thought would appeal to me that says, "You look good."
Yeah, no, that's absolutely brilliant marketing. I can't believe he lost his company. It's just crazy, but
Yeah, same with the Papa John's, you know, every
oh,
now and then.
can't fix everything.
So, you know, what you're talking about, you know, it's easy for me to wrap my head around it when I'm thinking about, you know, Buc-ee's or carpet cleaning or something like that. What about people that provide professional services? How do we take what you do and apply it in that field?
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, one of the things one of the first steps you have to do is map out your client journey. So from the first point your company has connection with, whether it be a website, a postcard, a telephone, all the way to the last point, and every place where your company interacts with a customer, you need to map it out. And then you look at each one of those points and you figure out, how do we make an experience out of this? So, like answering the telephone, you know, most people will answer it, you know, thank you for calling Dave's Insurance. How may I help you? We've all heard something like that. I worked with a bunch of Allstate guys a number of years ago, and one of them, there were like nine Allstate agents in the same city. And this guy was just having a hard time standing out. And we were in his office, and he loved rock and roll. He had like Led Zeppelin posters and autographed guitars and gold records on the wall. And so we were brainstorming how we could do stuff. And the lady who answers his front desk lady who answers his phone, actually came up with the idea on how to answer the phone. And, you know, I mean, it took a little while to get there, but at the end, they all agreed that they were going to answer the phone. Thank you for calling Dave's Allstate, the agency that rocks.
Yeah.
So it sounds a little quirky the first 19 times you say it, but it does, you know, answering the phone that way does a couple of things. One, it separates you from everybody else out there, which is what your marketing is supposed to do. And it also sifts, sorts, and screens out anybody who would be a lousy client for you, because they'd be like, I'm not, you know, I don't want to do business with them. So you look at all of the different points. So that's creating an experience out of answering the phone. You know, how do you create an experience out of sending a proposal? I mean, that's like the first thing I teach all my clients is, if you've got anything worth more than $500, like your service is worth more than $500, spring for the $9 FedEx to send it to them. I mean, seriously, you know, don't just, I ask her, how do you send that proposal? Oh, we email it over. Well, for God's sakes, print it out, put it in a FedEx, show that you care, show that this business means something to you. It doesn't even have to be overnight, send it 2 day if you want. But put it in a FedEx envelope and zip it over there. It's still got cachet, you know?
I'll take it one step further. When we're shipping out a proposal, we put it in a binder that's been professionally printed at a fulfillment house.
Yeah.
And it cost me $100 to put a binder in somebody's hands.
Yeah.
But you have to keep your focus on the size of the prize.
100%. I mean, you know, and as it gets bigger, I mean, you know, I've got, you know, for me, I mean, I call them shock and awe boxes. I don't know if you use the same terminology, but essentially it's Vance in a box. And, you know, I mean, I've got a card you open up and a video plays, and, you know, I mean, there's all this interactive stuff, and it's discovery. It's like a big giant Cracker Jack box with a bunch of prizes in the bottom, and you're pulling it out. You know, that presentation is key. Nobody else is doing this stuff, you know, and that's the point, is that nobody else is doing it. You're the one that's going to stand out, you know, by doing it. And I think the binder is, you know, is brilliant. You know, by doing that, you certainly stand out. Nobody else is going to copy that.
Well, and when we're sending somebody a binder, we don't do any free proposals. It's always the product of a mini project that they paid for.
Right.
And you know what nobody does with a binder that they paid for? They don't throw it away. And they don't have a home for it yet. So you know where they put it? They put it on their desk till they figure out what to do with it. And so
Yep.
that binder sits there and does something no sales guy can ever do or sales lady. It's there reminding them every day, all day long, hey, you need to take action on this.
Yeah, that's fantastic. But again, you look at the lifetime value of that client, and, you know, what can you afford to spend in order to acquire that? I mean, for you, I mean, if you're if your ticket is $10,000 and you're sending out a $100 package, it's like sitting at a slot machine. You put in $100 and 10,000 comes out. And if you sat at that slot machine and every time you put in 100, 10 grand would come out, you'd do it all day long. So, I mean, that's the way I approach, the marketing of, especially larger clients and customer acquisition is okay. To me, whoever can spend the most wins.
Yeah. Well, here's something we're doing. And by the time this episode goes live, hopefully my house will be under contract. We're selling our house. We haven't listed it yet, but I bought some sensors. And we're not talking like the little things that you get at Walmart, that you plug in. This is, cold nebulized scents that, comes from a diffuser. But something that hotels do, higher end hotels. And probably Disney does, I don't know. And it's about when somebody walks into the door of this house, the beauty is, I know this is a marketer, the beauty is I'm coming into a part of their brain that they're not expecting. They don't see it coming. And they're just like, it smells nice in here. And for me, it was easy making the expense. Because whatever I spend in these cents, I'm going to get a big multiple in, sales price on the house.
No doubt, no doubt. And I mean, your sense of smell is the number one sense for triggering memories. And so, when I work, especially when I work with medical professionals, one of the first things I get them to do is try to put something in their waiting room that's got a nice scent to it. Typically, it's a little toaster oven and they bake one cookie at a time. And so when you walk into the dentist's office, it smells like fresh baked cookies. And, so you're not smelling antiseptic or, any just the regular dentist smell. And it really disarms people. I mean, people are just like, you can just see their shoulders droop and they're, because usually you're uptight when you go into the dentist and then you get in there and you're like, oh, this smells like grandma's house. And because you're reactivating that memory. And so don't underestimate that power of smell. I think you're brilliant putting that in the house. That's perfect.
So thinking about this, back to what you were talking about, every step in the customer journey, so somebody walks into the waiting room of the dentist and all of a sudden, they're having happy memories triggered by smell.
100%.
So let me ask this. I mean, so this makes immense sense. You go through, you map out the entire journey and you just say, stage by stage, how can we engineer delight? And it's always easy when you see it in hindsight. You look at it, you're like, yeah, of course we're going to bake cookies. Yeah, who does? How do you come up with these ideas? What does ideation look like in terms of finding this?
Well, first you got to get the whole team involved. It's got to be a group effort because, as the boss, if you're the attorney or the dentist or the whoever, you're not going to come up with these ideas on your own. I mean, you might come up with one or two, but then you're force feeding it to your team. So when I do one-on-one consulting, this is a group effort. We get together and we brainstorm. First, we do the mapping and then we prioritize, okay, which one of the points on the map are we going to get our most bang for our buck? So, which one do we need to work on first? And then we look at, okay, what are we doing now? So before, if we go back to the phone thing, we answer the phone, thank you for calling Dave's Allstate. And we put a big X through it saying we're not going to do it that way anymore. And we just brainstorm ways of doing things. And it's no wrong answer. And then it's also iterations. So quick example, like if you ordered my book from me instead of Amazon, Amazon's going to send it to you in a brown box or a brown envelope. But if you order it from me, you're going to get it in a nice custom box. Now, I used to send it out in a plain brown box. And then I thought to myself, well, I'm the experienced guy. I should probably do something with sending out my book. So I got a custom box created. And then I'm like, well, I got the box. It's a book. Well, I should probably have a bookmark. Okay, great. So I got a bookmark made. And then I'm, oh, the bookmark should probably, let's fancy it up. Let's put a tassel on it. So now there's a tassel on the bookmark. Oh, well, it's kind of a workbook. So maybe I should include a pen. So, okay, now there's the logo pen in there. Well, they bought something, so I should include a thank you note. Okay, great. So I put a thank you note in there. Oh, wait, I'm sending all this crap. I might as well just put a sales letter in there too and talk to them about, my group coaching. That box more, and that took like 18 months for that process to go. And so it didn't like start with this great box. It started with a crappy box and just got better over time. So when you hear us talking about, these amazing things, realize that when it started, it wasn't quite so amazing. And it was iteration after iteration after iteration that we just kept adding to it that made it better. But the key thing is, if you have a team, if you want your employees on board, they got to be engaged in the whole process.
Wow. Vance, this has just been an amazing discussion. I'd love to go another 10, 20, 30 minutes. I just didn't, we got a wrap, but I love this. I love it. I love it. I love what you said about, don't lock yourself in a room and do it by yourself. Pull your team in. That is so essential because they're going to see things that you don't. But I could see people really needing you to kind of guide them through this process. My guess is you'll get some, what might take somebody else 3 or 4 years to get there, you'll probably get them there in less than a year.
Sometimes in a weekend.
Wow. So how can people contact you?
Well, I have a gift, so to speak, for everybody. I've got a what I call a hot sheet, and it is 52 ways to wow your customers without breaking the bank. So it's one wow a week. So if you're not the creative type, I got 52 ways for you to wow them. Some of them are free, some of them are ridiculously inexpensive, and you can find that at wow52ways.com.
Wow. Excellent. And I guess you're on LinkedIn and
LinkedIn and my website's vancemorris.com.
that's awesome. Well, Vance, thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies.
My pleasure, Craig. Thank you for having me.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.